There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order.
Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Greetings and salutations from Camp Kuia. I am Dutch Jones. It is time for a live Dutch Jones program. It is April 19th, 2011, Patriots Day. What is Patriots Day? Well, we're going to talk about it a little bit and tell you why it's Patriots Day and the weirdness that always happens on April 19th, it seems. I'm Dutch Jones, coming to you from the little hamlet of Kuia, California, outside the front gates of Sequoia National Park, sitting at about 1,000 feet in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, facing the west, towards the ocean, for those of you who don't know where that is. Yes, we are in California, and we are bringing you a live radio program from Stronghold Radio. Why do we call it Stronghold Radio? Because we live here in a stronghold that has spiritual and physical meaning as well. And maybe we'll go into that in detail one day. But we here at the Church of Kuia believe in a militant Christian worldview. We are not dispensationalists. We're not sitting around on our hands waiting to be raptured. We are going forth and pushing the full crown rights of Jesus Christ into all areas of the world, because everything in the world is God's and belongs to Him, and we are to be stewards of it. So we are doing everything we can to make sure that people realize we are here. They may not like us. They're either hot or cold, as the pastor said in Sunday's sermon, which you'll get to hear when we upload it. People either hate the church at Kuia or they love us. There are very few people who go, I don't really care one way or the other about them. But that's the way it is. I would rather that we here at Stronghold Radio, I get lots of hate mail, very little praise mail. I get praise mail from about the same number of people, or they like what we talk about, and that's fine. But it's either people either love us or hate us. I don't get anybody going, yeah, your show's kind of mediocre, but, you know, other than the rinky-dink comment from Arizona. But they either love us or hate us. And that's how I would have it, and that's how Jesus Christ is. People either love Him or they hate Him. They're either Christians or they're antichrists. And you can see that all over the internet, all over the news, all over the way things work. Bumper stickers, T-shirts, the way people live their lives. Well, we here at the Church of Kuia, and before we get into the April 19th little monologue that I've put together, I want to remind you that you can find us on Facebook. You can find us, if you're listening to us on DutchJones.info, you know where we are. But we're also on Facebook, and you can find us on YouTube. Just Google Dutch Jones, J-O-E-N-S, and you'll find us. If you wish to contact us email-wise, it's Dutch@DutchJones.info. Dutch, D-U-T-C-H, at D-U-T-C-H. JONS.info. Now remember, on the website there's a guest book, there's a forum. People have kind of abandoned the forum. Lou needs to pump that up. Lou needs to spend all day, you know, posting the forum everywhere, getting people angry and getting them in there, because the forum is a tool for you guys to use as listeners. I want to remind you that we have a new show, The Voice of Jefferson. I don't see him here. Hopefully Warland, is he in there? I don't see him in there. Warland's been having family crisis. His mother had a stroke and has been having trouble breathing, and I think she developed pneumonia, and he may not be here for that. I don't know. Was he doing a show when you came up? So, but normally at 4 o'clock, the Voice of Jefferson territory is on, and we're going to really try and support his show, and I encourage you people to listen and the things he has to say. The second thing that I want to tell you about is today there's been a programming change. Steve Klein will not be able to be with us for Code 20, so instead I am getting Andrew James from Christian Guardians. Christian Guardians is a group that we work closely with Andrew James is a Pakistani American. He's an American that's from Pakistan, I guess is the best way to put it. And he's a Christian, a patriot, a militia member. And he is trying to train Christians around the world, just like we are, to fight oppression and ungodly attacks upon our persons and our faith. So we're going to have him on, and he's going to be, I'll call him at the break, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what Christian Guardians do. Excuse me, was it Christian Defenders?
No, it's Christian Guardians.
Did he say, if I got it wrong, I'll apologize to him, because there's so many groups that we are affiliated with. There's Christian Defenders, there's Christian Guardians, there's Code 20. We are just working with so many groups, and we're reaching out to the Missouri Militia now. Central Missouri Militia is talking about coming here and training with us, so that's good, and that's why we do this ministry. We're rubbing elbows with good people, and I don't play with cyber tigers, cyber militias, paper tigers. I guess I mixed that up, but we only deal with people who are really putting actions to words. We don't mess around. Steve Klein's going out to Missouri to talk to these militia guys because they've been listening and they know what we're doing, and I'm really grateful for that. So that makes the ministry worth it. That's why it's good, those of you that support us, that get the pay in now, they get the funds in to keep us going. Now, Lou set up the PayPal thing again, so it's working, right, Lou? Good. We really got to get out of this location. We really need to fluctuate around $500 a month in donations. Right now we're doing more like $200, if even that. Yeah, and I know times are hard, but we would love to get into that building down there where we could sell military surplus. And if we sell military surplus, then we won't need the donations to be around $500. We can pay for itself. But we got to get in there for the internet access. It's just so hard to do this program. I would love to give Andrew James from Christian Guardians and the folks from Christian Defenders and the Missouri Militia just access to all their own shows. Uh-oh, my computers. What is up with this? Okay, postpone. Our computers have been plagued with things, and just now it just started to shut down on me. That's pretty weird. Let me see what we got going on here. I like this. What is that? Okay, I'm looking. I'm getting messages on... messages through Facebook and the people that are listening. Well, that's pretty much what's going on there. If you're involved with Larry Wick, we need your money in right away. We're getting to the point where we're going to cancel it. I had a lot of people verbally commit. Nobody's stepping forward. No one's stepping forward. I really need you guys to come forward. Right now, we've only got seven people paid. And he already bought his plane tickets. And if we have to cancel the class, I'm going to have to pay for his plane tickets. And I'm not going to be happy with that. So if you made a verbal commitment to be here, unless your mom died or, you know, you're having your spleen refinished, you better start sending the money. I hate it when I have to require people to do stuff up front. I try to get people to be good about it, but nobody brought their money to church last Sunday like was required. And nobody's mailed me their money that's through the radio show that says they want to do it, except for seven people. So if you're listening to this and you made a commitment to be here, please contact me through the mail or through the phone. And the phone number is the same. I carry the cell phone with me that we use for this. It's 559-346-8362. 559-346-8362. And if people don't step up that promised to be in this class, so that, because I counted we had 25, I won't do it again. I won't offer training on the radio again. Not that, you may say I'm being snooty, but it took a lot of effort to get Larry Wick here. And now people are backing out on me, so I won't do it again. And this happened to me when I did the women's shooting class. I had like 12, 15 people were going to be there. Five showed up. And there's that whole attitude to this cause where people are just afraid to show up. They make excuses. Oh, I got to go to soccer. Oh, I got to work later. I don't have the money. Well, they're going out and buying beer and cigarettes and alcohol. I stubbed my toe, Lou says. I turned on your mic, sorry. It's just pathetic. When you think about the sacrifices that our forefathers made, and people even, in our current era have made, people have died for our freedom. And I'm not talking about soldiers. I'm talking about patriots that have been murdered by the federal government. And you're too, I'm all gung-ho, I'll be there, but nobody paid. We even made an announcement in church, and I said, everybody who was taking a class, come see me. And I'm pretty angry about it right now. So people need to step up. If they want to be in the class, I told them April 20th was the deadline. That's tomorrow. But we will extend it because I don't want to call Larry Wick and say, you just spent $1,200 on a plane ticket. I'm sorry, you have to eat it. Because I'll have to refund the money of those seven people. Why should I punish them? Why should I punish seven people who stepped up and paid for it? you know. So it's really breaking my heart that this is happening again, like it did with the women's pistol class. So you guys need to step up, those of you that made the commitment. Okay, today is April 9th. Wait, before I do this, let me tell you what we've been doing all day. We had a gigantic oak tree fall over in front of the church a few weeks ago because of the storms. This thing was like over 300 years old. It was about three or four cords worth of wood, and it fell over. And the pastor's worked on it a couple days by himself, just segmenting it, and we were letting it die off because it was just too heavy with all the water in it. So as it was drying out, we decided to have a work party this morning, and we had our young men, four young men, Lewis included. None of the girls showed up again. And so we had about 12 people out there, including Stacy. And I was a chainsaw guy. I can't believe they gave me a chainsaw. I was cutting limbs and brush and cutting stuff down 18 to 24 inches for firewood. And Lewis and Stacy worked their hideys off. And I just want to congratulate them here on the air and tell them I'm proud of them. Just the amount of work they did, it was about 75, 80 degrees. Everybody was sweating out here, direct sunlight. We started at 9, and we got done at 12, like 08. It took just over 3 hours, this giant tree. It was like a 40-foot tree with five or six major limbs, you know, and the base of it was huge. It was probably, it had two main stems going out of it, and each one was about 40 inches around. And we had the young boys working the splitter. We were splitting all of it. I mean, they were working in shifts. Lou mostly bucked brush. Stacy and I loaded and moved. Everybody that helped out got the firewood, so we had to deliver it. So we had pickups coming and going. Stacy dragged brush everywhere and raked and everything. So what was really cool about it was that we had 12 people there. And the camaraderie, I can't say some certain words now because of the stroke. But the fellowship was magnificent. Nobody was whining. Nobody was saying, hey, he's doing more, you're doing less. No, it was just awesome. We got it done. I can't believe we busted it out that fast. You know, if we'd have gone and got 15 illegal aliens, they'd still be out there. Had to get that dig in. But it was just amazing. Nobody got hurt that I know of. I didn't chop anybody's fingers off or anything. But just praise to Stacy and Lou, because it was hard work. I'm sore right now. I'm tired. I can my forearm on my right arm, because my left arm was just guiding the chainsaw. But my right arm, I had this little tiny chainsaw, and I was cutting everything. It was already on the ground, so it's not like I had to climb or anything. I only got the chainsaw stuck once, and Pastor came to my rescue. I think Pastor's wife was bucking with a chainsaw, too,
yes,
bucking brush.
Was.
We were playing buck-buck, right, Lou? We don't know what that game is. It's some Bill Cosby thing. And then we played buck-buck. But we don't know what that is. But that's what we did today. I had to rebuild a weed eater. I told you one of our weed eaters was down, and I was like hurting. So we found a used one that didn't work for $50, and I salvaged the parts off of it. And after we did all that work, Lou went out and weed-eated an entire hillside basically by himself. So that was magnificent. And I'm just impressed with you two today, and I just have to share that. It was nice to see everybody working hard and getting together, but I'm most proud of my family here. So, without further ado, 13 minutes into my diatribe, it's time to actually hit a topic that you guys probably care about. Sharing my family's secrets and concerns with you is probably embarrassing, Stacey. Let me take a drink of well water here. Oh, it's such a blessing to have good well water. And the water in the valley is terrible. It's all sulfur and nitrate-ridden, arsenic-ridden. Today, April 19th, is Patriots Day. Why, do you ask? Well, April 19th, 1775, is the unofficial, you know, everybody looks at it as the start. Some people say 1776, July 4th, of when the American Revolution started. It's when the shooting actually started at Lexington and Concord. Now, there were skirmishes before because the military was already on a war footing, the British military, and they were coming to disarm people. People forget about that. This was the ATF of its day coming to disarm the people of these little towns, and what did they do? They repelled and killed them. They killed the attackers, period. So that was April 19th, 1775. Some other dates that match up, and I'm just going to hit these, you know, off and on. I'm not going to do it in chronological order. But those of you that remember April 19th, 1992, that's when the Weaver family was first attacked by FBI ninjas in the trees. They shot the dog, then murdered the Weaver boy. So that was April 19th, 1992. That's a good thing to remember. A year later, April 19th, 1993, the Waco Branch Davidian Church was attacked and burned down. That's when the siege started by FBI and Batfag cowards. That's when it happened. And people may not know that. April 19th. April 19th plays something. I'm not a numerologist. I'm not into these hidden meanings. But the federal government is. And they like to do things on certain dates. let's see. In South Korea, this is more April 19th stuff around the world. It's not just an American thing. In South Korea, President Syngman Rhee ruled the nation with anti-communism as a state policy. President Rhee was ousted in an uprising called the April 19th Revolution. So it works for the other guys, too, the communist April 19th Revolution. Now, here's a day of death in history that's on April 19th. In reverent memorial to those who have died on April 19th, and as a precaution against new acts of violence from the New World Order, please work for peace on this date that draws near. Well, I would say prepare for war. I'm reading this as an article that I found. Think about it. What do all of these things have in common? Waco, Oklahoma City Murrah Building, the Bay of Pigs, the attack on Randy Weaver, the shot heard around the world, the attack on the Warsaw Poland ghetto when the Nazis went in and attacked the Jews who finally resisted somewhere, the explosion in a gun turn on the USS Iowa, all happened on April 19th. Now, April 19th, 1775, Massachusetts, when an unordered shot heard around the world began the American Revolution, this is now commemorated as a victory for the forces of liberty, as it did turn out to be the beginning of a revolution for liberty and freedom, which gave us a republic. A republic. It gave us a republic, not a democracy, you idiots. It keeps saying that. It could have gone in many other directions, though, just like the French Revolution did. It is impossible to know the thoughts which actually brought about this revolutionary action. I still wish I had a time machine. I'd love to go back and shoot some British scum. Now, April 19th, 1871, the communal revolution started with a... Okay, it's starting to shut me off again. Hang on, what's this? Look at this. Why does it keep doing this? Let's do 4 hours and then that one. And then hit postpone?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Where was I? In the end... Okay, the popular initiative of March 18th inaugurates one new era of experimental positive scientific policy. It is the end of the old government and clerical world, militarism, officialism, the exploration, agitation, the monopolies of the privileged, to which the proletariat owes its serfdom, the fatherland in its misfortune and its disasters. We, the citizens of Paris, we have the mission of achieving the modern revolution, broadest and most fertile of all those which illuminated history. We have the duty to fight and overcome. Now, this is from the Declaration de la Commune de Paris au Peuple. Now, that's, of course, we all know that the French Revolution was a humanist revolution, a bloody, vile, scumbag revolution. That was April 19th, 1871. Now, April 19th, 1919, mutiny of the sailors in the Black Sea. That started actually on the April 19th and went till the 21st of April. Several French warships around Sebastopol, brought in to aid in stopping the advances of the Red Army, are subject to mutiny. It begins with the sailors in the battleship France and spreads. A delegation made up partly of anarchist communist sailors demands suspension of the war against Russia, the return of the ships to France, and no disciplining for their actions. Now, in Sebastopol, French officers massacre participants in a demonstration to prevent them from fraternizing with the mutineers. Despite the promise of the officers, the mutineers, such as Alphonse Savère Canon, are treacherously arrested and receive 10 to 20 years of prison. So on April 19th, 1919, there you go, your three 19s in a row, the French refused to fight the Russians. Pretty amazing stuff. April 19th, 1933. Here's a good one for you. What happened on that date? I didn't remember it. Franklin Delano Roosevelt takes the U.S. off the gold standard. That's April 19th, 1933. A day that will live in infamy, no doubt. And it will be reversed by who? Nixon? I think it was Nixon, right? So President Roosevelt began the socialist attack on our economic system. Well, actually, that started with the Fed, but he made a major blow when he took us off the gold standard. Now, April 19th, 1943, a contingent of 2,000 heavily armed Schutzstaffel troops with tanks, they enter the Warsaw, Poland ghetto. Now, I know we're all anti-Zionist here, but I love this story. While the civilian population hides in underground bunkers, the ghetto fighters attack the Germans with incendiary bottles and just a few guns and bullets. Shocked by the Jewish resistance, that's two words you don't usually see during World War II. They were very passive and very, very sheepish. Jewish resistance. That's why I like this story about the Warsaw Ghetto. The SS is forced to withdraw. I hate Nazis, though, worse than I hate Zionists. Unable to put down the revolt with conventional weapons, the Germans resort to setting the ghetto on fire and carpet bombing it, basically. And what this did is created more rubble. Now, still, they were in the city and there was no way for them to win. But at least they resisted. And I've got many more of these things, but I want to discuss this. I don't see anybody in the chat room really talking about this. Are these things that you already knew or you just don't care about? Am I informing you? And, you know, that's fine. But we even suffered from this a little bit ago. Somebody on another radio network said, hey, April 19th's rolling around. They're going to pull something. They may go after, you know, and he just offhandedly said it. I don't think it was meant maliciously or anything. But people get it in their psyche that these dates mean something, that that they're important to the New World Order and to the enemy. And I think I'm not into numerology. I'm not into hidden numbers. I don't think God works that way. I think it's confusing enough that he wouldn't do that. But that's just my opinion. But if the enemy thinks that, if Hitler thought there was power in finding the Grail and the Ark, as he tried to do, and all the voodoo and everything that he got into, we have to understand it, and we have to see why it's important. So today, you know, even though we were working, and I knew it was April 19th, I kept a pistol on me at all times. I kept my eye every time a car rolled by. There was this white van parked down by the bridge, and we went over there to look and see what they were doing, the pastor and I, and it was from the college, and they were measuring the flow of the water. But anytime I see a white van with tinted out windows, because that's what I used to use when I did surveillance, we got to perk our ears up. We got to maybe be a little more attentive this time of year. And you're gonna, there's a lot more. I've got a ton of stuff on this April 19th thing. They seem to really love this date. And I don't know why. I didn't get a chance to do a lot of research today. I don't know if there's any satanic powers in it. If you guys know, hey, Warland, welcome in. If you guys understand that, give me a call, 559-346-8362 on this Patriots Day. I was going to just read to you about Lexington and Concord, but I've done that before, and the importance of it and the impact that it had, that it launched a sense of liberty for people all around, even though the French got it wrong. It's because why? Because socialists and anarchists got a hold of it. And I think that's a problem we have to look at today. In this revolution, I don't think this revolution is going to start on April 19th. I mean, unless they're really stupid and they want to start attacking people again, you know, next year. Obviously, today wasn't the day. The day's almost over. And as far as I know, there have been no attacks on Liberty today. If you know of one, call me. We need to know about it. But maybe next year, 2012. And it's funny, isn't today tax day? Didn't they move tax day to April 19th? Yesterday. That was yesterday? Okay, thank you. I stand corrected. The days kind of meld together when you're busy all the time, which is good. I'm glad to be busy. But the fact that they find it important means we have to acknowledge it. So I've got a couple more here. Actually, I have more than a couple. Where is it? This one, I don't even know what it is. I'm going to put it out there because somebody sent it to me. April 19th, 1952, England. 35 Operation Gandhi supporters picket Aldermaston spy base in India. Okay, so that's pretty cool. April 19th, 1960, after the Korean Peninsula was divided at the 38th parallel, in the north, Kim Il-sung, who was backed by the USSR, and the south, Syngman Rhee, who was supported by the USA, established each government respectively, April 19, 1960. In South Korea, President Syngman Rhee ruled the nation with anti-communism as a state policy. President Rhee was later ousted, as I said before, in an April 19th revolution. April 19, 1960, in Namibia, founding of SWAPO. Remember the terrorist SWAPO, if you know anything about Namibia in Africa in the 60s? Be a man, join the Rhodesian Army. April 19th, 1961, the Bay of Pigs, a disastrously failed invasion of Cuba. Freedom fighters betrayed by being promised air support, which was not provided by who? JFK. What's funny is, you know, we could have really made a difference in Cuba. It's just insane to me that they didn't support the Cuban patriots. As usual, our government stabbed someone in the back. And for me, I think that's why Kennedy was killed. I think the Cubans were really torqued. And I've studied the mercenaries that were there. There were 7 Americans that were involved in that attempted coup, and they wanted blood because they saw good men die. There are still people rotting in prison from that 1961 invasion, failed invasion, when Kennedy balked. I'm not a big fan of Kennedy. Now, the declassified CIA documents show that the final invasion plan did bar the U.S. pilots from joining in the bombing runs, but the exile pilots who had been attacking Cuban airports and other targets for 3 days before the invasion collapsed on April 19th were exhausted and dispirited, according to the documents. So they let Cuban pilots fly the planes, but then they pulled them back. Now, initially, the CIA blamed the lack of air cover for the invasion's failure, but the CIA Inspector General report blamed the CIA itself. It's arrogance, poor planning, and almost willful bungling. Yeah, they threw him at the beach. Bay of Pigs is an interesting thing to study, especially Che Guevara, who was there, and, of course, a couple other people, the counter-revolution to Fidel Castro. Morgan was there, an American mercenary who was pretty amazing. If you can Google it, you Google it. Now, April 19th, 1971, U.S., several hundred Vietnam veterans against the war begin an encampment on Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C., and they launch Operation Dewey Camp 3. It lasted from April 19th to the 23rd. Another date there. It's interesting stuff. Now, here's one that hits close to home. April 19th, 1978. California governor and current governor, Moonbeam Jerry Brown, refuses a request to extradite American Indian Movement leader Dennis Banks to South Dakota to stand trial. Remember the Second Battle of Wounded Knee? Interesting. April 19th, 1980, Columbia founding of M19, the April 19th movement, a leftist guerrilla group. Why April 19th? 47 U.S. sailors were killed on April 19, 1989, by an explosion in a gun turret on the USS Iowa during gunnery exercises in the waters off Puerto Rico. Now, the turret explosion is initially blamed on alleged suicide pact between sodomite sailors, as conjectured, by naval intelligence and leaked to NBC News. I remember the family got all mad about that. I can't remember the guy's name, but I remember the video of that. Just booming. If anybody has any questions, let me know, because I'm reading this stuff. Are we going to play some music now, Lou? Is that what you're going to do? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a break right now, folks. You're listening to Stronghold Radio. We're going over Patriots Day and some of the things that happened. It's kind of mellow today. I'm a little tired from working, so I appreciate you listening to Stronghold Radio. We'll be right back.
As Mrs. and Mr. America fret, they huddle around their TV set, they worry and they sweat. They're thinking I'm the enemy, the one they need to get, because their mind controllers tell them I'm a major threat. The talking heads, the daily press, they cultivate stupidity and harvest ignorance. They point a crooked finger and they're all unanimous by calling me extremist, cause I'm down on Zionists. So now I want to sing a new song. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was the Jews who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. Now what's so bad about being extreme? If I'm extremely innocent, if I'm extremely keen, if I'm extremely paranoid, it's cause of what I've seen. It's written in between the lines of every magazine. The FBI, the CIA, are working for the KGB and getting in my way. Cause they don't like my politics, they dog me every day. I'm getting tired of telling them the problem is oy vey. The enemy is communism. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was the
just want to get the job done.
To know the truth, but all he gets is phony news. His state of mind is captured by the mob's opposing views. His only guarantee is that he's sure to be amused. Some may win, but most will lose. Their lives are only figments of the thoughts they cannot choose. And I doubt you'll ever see me on the 6 o'clock news, exposing lying, thieving, cheating communists. Who made me sing you this song? I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and a camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinners who realize it was the Jews who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. I want to be an extremist and I just want to have fun. Cha-cha-cha.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Show. We try to come to you Monday through Friday whenever we can from 5 to 7 p.m. The first hour is just intimate, just us. Second hour, we go on Liberty Tree Radio. We spread out around the world, and we tend to have guests and things in the second hour so we can reach the masses. Today's guest will be Andrew James from Christian Guardians, a similar group to Code 20, a similar group to Christian Defenders. And what they do is they train Christians in the Middle East and in places where the Muslim population is violent, which is going to be everywhere soon, to give you another angle, another look at what other people are doing. And we have worked with them. We have trained some of their people. And hopefully we can get some of them to come to the Larry Wick training, and they'll be able to do participate, and they can do that. By the way, we just realized last night, I think it was. Was it last night? That Benny Hill was in the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Benny Hill plays the toy maker in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, by the way, for those of you that are concerned about such things. And the game of Buck Buck was in Fat Albert, and it was Bill Cosby. And yes, Bill Cosby is one of the last public figures that still has a moral compass. I can't read who said that because I'm too far away from the screen, but that was a great comment, whoever made that. Who said that? I See Freedom. Good point, I See Freedom. We're talking about April 19th and how many strange and unusual things. Now, one could argue, okay, pick July 4th and show all the things happened on July 4th. But it just seems lately April 19th is a big thing. I mean, you know, they blew up, the government came in and blew up the Murrah building and, you know, using government operatives. You know, I forgot his name already. I've blurred it out. But let's see, that's just, you know, they do stuff like that. So April 19th, 1992, we're going to continue with this until you people scream and tell me to stop. 1992, April 19th, protesters rally in the annual Easter protest at the site of nuclear weapons testing, and nearly 500 are arrested. April 19th, 1992, first attempted raid on the Weaver family. Remember that? April 19th, 1993, federal agents attacked the Branch Davidian Church near Waco, Texas, shooting and incinerating 80 women, men and children. I think there were 17 children involved in that. Now, the Branch Davidian church was burned because they claimed that they had automatic illegal weapons and that they were molesting children, neither of which has ever been proven.
But once they fired on the ATF guys, it became a different issue, so they were provoking it. They were probing by fire. They knew that these people would do this. If they really wanted a peaceful arrest, they could have got David Koresh as he walked around daily. The only mistake that the Davidians made, the only critique I have, is that they didn't come out of the doorway and kill every ATF agent in their driveway. They shot through the walls. They were very amateurish in how they did it. They should have let them enter and then slaughtered them and then went out and got the support team. That's the only thing that I would have recommended they do different. Kill every ATF agent that was at Waco. Yeah, I'm saying that, government stooges, idiots that are listening to this, because they murdered children and everyone that was involved with that. After this next revolution, we need to hunt them down, try them, and execute them. I'm not going to decide how to execute them because I'm just a little too brutal. I'll let the rule of law decide how to execute them. All the way up to Janet Reno. Janet Reno needs to have her head lopped off for what she did at Waco. Period. End of story. Now, April 19th, 1995, in Oklahoma City at 9:02 a.m., a massive car bomb explosion was used as a detonator, a diversion of attention away from the internal explosions that were set within the building by federal agents. The demolition charge on the critical failed support columns destroyed the entire side of a nine-story federal building in Oklahoma, killing 168 persons, including 19 children, inside a daycare center. Now, a decorated Gulf War veteran was later convicted for the attack. You know, you notice I don't say "and later executed," because I don't believe he was executed. I think this guy, this was a part of it. I think he was, whether he knew it or not, was a stooge for the government. Now, the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City set off a hunt for Arab terrorists and Muslims, resulting in new laws suspending due process for non-U.S. citizens. Which is funny about that, because if you look at the history of that and how they were after everybody, there were Red Army faction guys in town, there were Filipino Muslim terrorists from Abu Sayyaf in town. Boy, the feds just used every string they could to make this thing look like a terrorist attack. And for those of you that don't remember, this is when Clinton, the big fat guy, the communist, tried to get the first Patriot Act through, and it failed. And it failed. Now, in April 1996, Marine Corps issues a treatise against right-wing extremism. They wrote a big thesis on what to look for, how to identify in 96. They're getting ready. Now, let me hit this again. Now, in April 19th, 1999, a civilian contract worker for the U.S. Navy, David Sains, is killed and five others are wounded on the Puerto Rican territory of island of Vizcuez. I can't remember how to do it. A 500-ton Navy bomb missed its target on the U.S. Navy bombing range. It overshot and hit civilians. This was the incident which rekindled and renewed the struggle by the people of Vizcuez and Puerto Rico to get the U.S. Navy to stop bombing this island as it had done for over 60 years. Many other cataclysms occurred very close to April 19th. President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, luckily, on April 14th, 1865. The Virginia Tech Massacre was April 16th, 2007. The Columbine Massacre was April 20th, which some people told me April 20th is Adolf Hitler's birthday, but I don't know if that's true or not.
I think it is.
They kidnapped Elian Gonzalez on April 22nd, 2000. It's time to update the famous quote from Reverend Martin Niemöller on constitutional rights. I love this quote. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, the right to keep and bear arms, are not dependent on which religion or ideology someone believes. If one group can be liquidated, it's going to be just a matter of time before they get around to you. Now, Reverend Martin Niemöller, commenting on events in Germany 1933 to 1933, said this, and it's Reverend Martin Niemöller, N-I-E-M-O-L-L-E-R. You need to look this up. In Germany, they came first for the communists. I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't in a trade union. Then they came for the Catholics. I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. Then they came for me, and by that time, no one was left to speak up. Reverend Dr. Martin Niemöller, July 1st, 1937, he was arrested by the Third Reich. An update of this concept, which the United States in mind, would go something like this. First, they burned the house of the Siboney's Liberation Army and killed all their members. Most of us didn't object because we didn't believe in the same things that the SLA believed in. Remember, that was Patty Hearst's group? And because of that, what grew SWAT, that was the beginning of the militarization of our police when they went after the SLA who were robbing banks. Then they dropped a bomb on the building of the Philadelphia Move Group and destroyed two city blocks that killed 11 members. Most of us did not object because we did not believe in the same things that the Move Group did. Remember that? They were like a Rastafarian group, if I remember right. Then they burned the house of Gordon Call, a tax protester, and killed him. Now, most of you did not object to that because you didn't believe in the same things as Gordon Call. Remember, he was an anti-Zionist, the way he was depicted, and how they butchered his body, cut off his hands, and all kinds of things when he was betrayed and murdered in that house. Then they burned the house of Robert Matthews, leader of the Order, and killed him. Remember that? Now, I'm not a friend of Nazis. I am not a friend of Nazis or the Order or any of those things. But how many people cheered when the government went in and did that? He was even a Nazi in a non-war situation should have right to due process. Most of us did not object because we did not believe in fascism and things that Robert Matthews believed in. Then they conducted a siege and a raid of an 80-member Covenant of the Sword, Arm of the Lord religious church. Most of us did not object. In fact, I saw people cheering when they attacked the Davidians at Waco, because we do not believe in the same things as the Covenant of the Sword, Arm of the Lord. Excuse me, that was a different one. Then they conducted a siege at Randy Weaver's family. The Covenant of the Sword was not Waco. I confused the two because my head's like messed up. Then they conducted a siege and a raid of Randy Weaver's family and killed or wounded nearly everyone present, even including the baby and the dog. Many of us did not object because we did not believe in the same things as Randy Weaver's family did. Remember, he was a white separatist, not a supremacist. He was simply a separatist, wanted to be left alone. Then they burned the church of the Branch Davidians and killed nearly all of them. A few did not object because we did not believe in the same things as the Branch Davidians. Then they kidnapped Elian Gonzalez, and it continues, it continues, it continues. Last week, they took away the guns from a soldier. Said he was crazy. Not because of anything that was real. They made it up. They found out he was in a militia. They probably found out he was in Code 20. They probably found out he was part of what was going here at Cui, and they decided to test him. When they come for your neighbors, when they come for people down the street, are you going to wait till they come for your loved ones? We didn't. We sent 30 people there with video cameras and surrounded the SWAT team, the DOJ SWAT team. Are you ready to do that? When the KGB used to come and drag people out in the middle of the night and they disappeared, had the neighbors shown up with farm implements and butchered the KGB, do you think we would have had the Cold War?
No.
I don't think so. Who knows? History can go anywhere. I just got one in here. Don't forget about Richard Snell, who was murdered on... Huh? You don't know what the Cold War is? Don't act like an idiot. What? Would we have had the Cold War if the people in Russia had destroyed their communist government?
I don't think
Lou doesn't get the statement. What don't you understand? All that chainsaw fumes went to your head, huh? Now, I got this one sent to me from Nathan Ashley, who's a listener to the show. Richard Snell was murdered on April 19th, and I need to Google. Somebody tell me who Richard Snell was. They said he was an anti-Zog person, and he was butchered, murdered on April 19th. So I don't know who that is, if somebody wants to bring that up. So that's a good point. Thank you for telling me about that. Thank you for listening, Nathan. I appreciate it. I'll get back into the room here. But, yeah, it goes back to the old thing. You know, we must hang together or we will all hang separately. That's why we're putting together a Christian Covenant community here. Now, I don't agree with everything in that little thesis that I just read, but somebody sent it to me, and I really liked it. I really liked it. You know, I would oppose people rounding up Catholics, even though I don't like Catholics. I wouldn't oppose them imprisoning the priests and the leadership for swindling the people. But I would not oppose them deporting all Muslims. I wouldn't, because there's a different kind of threat there. So I don't agree 100% with what I just read, but I thought you needed to hear it. to put it into perspective, some of the things that are going on out there, some of the weirdness that's going on out there. It's easy to say, oh, well, that's just Missouri, that's just Massachusetts, that's California. But I keep telling you folks, if they can get away with it here in California, they're going to adapt it to come to your state.
Yep.
They're going to adapt it to come to your state. They test it here because there's enough liberals here that they can get away with it. And the April 19th thing, they love symbology. What was that from? Boondock Saints. The symbology of it. I don't even know if that's a word. But we've got to keep our eyes open for this symbolism that they like to use. Because we've got to realize that Janet Reno, Obongo, they are Satanists, whether they know it or not. That's why they promote the abortion, so that they can sacrifice to Baal those babies. That's why they promote what they do. That's why they thwart good things. They are a terror to good works. That's why Janet Napolitano, a lesbian, a person who conducts themselves in a hateful sin that God hates, won't allow her border to be secured. But yet, you know, directs all kinds of things to go on that good people go to prison for. And we live in an upside-down, backwards world today. And there may be dates out there. I saw people playing around with the day after tax deadline is 041-911. Any time from this date later is a penalty if you owe. You know, stuff like that. They put a lot of thought into the way they put these laws together. I remember the California statute that demanded that homosexuality, and I'll use that word because that's what's in the law, be allowed to be taught in the schools, and that if a little boy wants to use the girls' restroom, he has to, was Bill 777, put together by a lesbian on Schwarzenegger's staff, and he signed it. She was also on Gray Davis's staff. He kept her. 777 is the number of God, in case you didn't know that. So they did that on purpose to slap Christians in the face. And they love to do that kind of stuff. They love to twist the screws. They hate Christians. They are antichrists. We battle not just against Obongo and his regime. We battle against a worldwide network of evil, vile men and a few women who do nothing but sit back all day and come up with ways to exterminate us slowly. Because they try to exterminate us rapidly and make it way too obvious, then even the NASCAR dads and the soccer moms are going to erupt. And so it's important to watch these dates. And I would like some feedback from you folks. Am I tilting at windmills, or do you think there's something to this? Is this something? Obviously, nothing's happened today. Maybe if we get to expect it, they stop. You know, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition unless you're expecting it, and then they don't show up because you expect it, and they want the sense of surprise to be there. What are you doing? Oh, I didn't hook up my phone. Where is it? Where is my phone? Yeah. Nobody's called. That's good, because I didn't have the phone hooked up. Thank you for reminding me, Stace. Let's hook this in here. Let's just do this. And a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Here it's going to go, bup, bup, bup. That's the sound my phone makes when I plug it into the system. What? That's just saying that my phone's plugged in.
Oh.
Boy, I'm really tired today. Mm-hmm. Bucking brush and playing buck-buck with a tree is tough stuff. I guess the last few minutes here, I want to talk to you the importance of having a chainsaw and knowing how to use it. Now, a good chainsaw is very expensive. We went looking around in chainsaws for about $150. Isn't that what we saw? You know, I don't know if that's going to last you very long. I don't know anything about chainsaws. I'm going to need to look into it. The pastor's an expert. That's what he does. He's a tree surgeon. He, you know, cuts down trees and saves trees and trims trees and climbs like a monkey. But a chainsaw is so handy. I was thinking about it today as a survival tool. The problem is you got to feed it. You have to have the two-cycle oil and the fuel and all that kind of stuff. But that storing that stuff far outweighs its utility. We were talking last Sunday about search and rescue. If a building collapses on somebody and you need to get to someone, a chainsaw makes it so much faster. You don't have to lift up as much if you segregate and compartmentalize and make squares of the roof.
the walls that you're trying to get through. Now you don't want to get close to the victim. You use it as a primary tool to gain entrance, but then you get more micro tools to get in there once you think you're close to. Stop kicking the mic stand, please.
Oh, sorry.
It makes a horrible sound to everybody downstream. It's like ka-thump, ka-thump.
I thought I was fine.
No, you're fine. Now, but as far as survival, think about trying to make like a cabin or a lean-to with an axe. I mean, granted, you should still have the skill to use an axe, which I'm dangerous with an axe, but I know how to use one roughly. But a chainsaw would help you put up a structure very fast. Now, stealth-wise, they're not very good. I don't recommend using it as a primary weapon or something. But being able to clear brush for farming, being able to build structures, being able to just do firewood. Think about a post-collapse economy where you're the guy with the chainsaw. Because everybody in your neighborhood, they're like, what do I need a chainsaw for? Let's say you're in an urban interface or you're in a part of the country where there's a lot of trees, even in the cities. When people start relying on wood to cook their food and to heat their homes to keep them alive, the guy with the chainsaw is going to be very, very important. You're going to want to be that guy. Now, they may even supply the fuel for you to do the stuff. You can trade it out. But a guy with a stack of firewood is going to be a rich man. A guy who can help build fortifications because he has a chainsaw. Now, there'll become a time when, you know, you might be able to convert them to alcohol. I don't know that. I don't know if you can convert them to run on propane or something. But you need a short-handled axe and a chainsaw. Excellent addition to a survival for a survival in place. Not necessarily to carry down the road, but if you have a vehicle or something like that, you could. I highly, highly suggest it. Don't get an electrical chainsaw. We were making jokes about that. You know, what are you going to do when the electricity goes out? And I'm like, I'll just get a big extension cord. You know, well, that's not going to work. Because I see a lot of people buying electrical appliances for survival, things like electrical mills and things like that. Now, I was talking to our small engine guy today, and he says that he can take an alternator and create a this is what he says. I need your help on this, guys. You take any DC motor, like an electric fan motor out of a modern car, put fan blades on it, put it up somewhere, it'll begin to spin, and it will produce voltage. I'm not an electrical guy, so I don't know if that's true, but if that's the case, we're really well off. I've got tons of electrical fans. So what I'm going to be experimenting with them is put them out because the wind doesn't blow very much here, but when it does, it might be nice to use it, and see if we can get an electrical current out of it. Heck, I can even just have Lou spin it while I put the meter on it, I guess. But I had never heard that you can take a DC motor and it will output DC if you spin it with a blade on it. Huh? What are you laughing at over there? The chat room is mellow today. But don't forget, coming up after the break, we're going to be on Liberty Tree Radio. I'm going to dial up Andrew James, Christian Guardians. Now, if I'm wrong and it's Christian Defenders, forgive me. You know, give me a little slack here. About 2 minutes before we went on the air, I found out that Steve Klein is doing a TV interview for some Arab TV, and he never gets on Fox. I wish we could get Steve on Fox. It'd be fun to see him tear into those guys. But what's going on? Let's see. I guess my chat room is locked up. That's why I'm not seeing anything. Okay. Thank you. I thought the chat room was dead, and it's just because of my stupid computer. Bill Cosby cheated on his wife. Let me catch up here. Hang 'em high. Hello, Scotty. Redneck family. Hey, Minuteman. Hello, Minuteman. Hello, Minuteman. Rounding up Masodomites would be okay. Hey, okay. So everybody's in there talking. I didn't know Bill Cosby cheated on his wife.
I didn't know either.
We should turn into a current event show where we talk about celebrities.
I guess
Putting pops aren't around anymore, but you can still play Buck Buck. Bill Cosby cheated on his wife.
I
was on a commercial for Pudding Pops. I didn't get to meet Bill Cosby. I was in charge of the kids, and he made one of the kids cry. I think he called him a cracker. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. A little kid wouldn't even know what cracker means. So I'm glad that I don't know why this didn't scroll down. But does anyone know if the DC motor, if you run it, will output electricity? Because I've seen all the alternator videos on YouTube that you have to rewire the alternator for lower RPM and all that kind of stuff. Because what I really want to do is a water wheel. We've got two free-flowing streams. Well, one's a river, one's a stream. And if we could get a water wheel going under our house to just charge our batteries for our communications or our flashlights. That would be perfect. And I've got a bunch of bike parts. We're going to put together some wheels. The ditch committee doesn't want me to do it. I'm not allowed to impede the flow of the stream. They act like it's actually being used. It's not really. There's a couple people who use it for irrigation, like the orchard, but it's full of poop from the cows. So we always tell the people that come up from the city, make sure you drink out of the stream. Make sure you drink out of the ditch there. You don't want to drink out of the river. You'll get jarty. Oh, but that. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. Even the city folks. We will have the pastor on Thursday for Practical Christianity. I don't know what the topic's going to be. When I find out, I will let you know. There is a Wednesday night Bible study going on tomorrow. So those of you that are locals that are listening, and I know you are, there are some that listen to the podcast when they get home. And let's see. Okay, no comments, just people liking what I'm saying. Well, that's cool. People like the show. Thank you, Steiner. We got a couple of minutes here. Hello, who is this?
Are you going to do a second hour or just the first hour?
We're going to do a second hour. We have Andrew James from Christian Guardians coming on.
Okay, sent you a thing on the chat room. They're having on now with John and Ken that there are two Mexicans probably last night that were skinned alive. By the amount of blood loss as their skin, they basically skinned their head first and started going down their back and stuff like that before they died. Continued to, skin them and fillet them and cut their hearts out.
Now, where did that happen? So, south of the border or north of the border?
Hold on just a second.
We've got like 2 minutes.
Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm doing good. Now, where did this happen?
What happened in Mexico just crossed the border. Apparently, two men who tentatively, this is just breaking news, have been identified as possibly either mules or lowly henchmen of one of the cartels.
Somebody messed up.
Kind of got some trouble with their bosses. They decided to make an example of them. They started, the report said, surgically, with surgical skill, they cut around the neck without cutting deeply in, just through the dermis. They began to cut from ear to ear, across the top, and from the bridge of the nose to the back of the head, and peel the skin off their heads.
Wow.
They then began taking the knives or scalpels, whatever they were using, and stripping their flesh off their back. Now, when you pull skin off a live person, there's a lot of bleeding.
Yeah.
When a person dies, for whatever reason, the circulatory system shuts down, the pressure goes down, so you can tell when the person died. So halfway through stripping the skin off their back, they died.
Mm.
They continued to strip the flesh off the chest down to the waist. They then cracked open the chest, cut out the heart, and hung up the bodies so that the locals in that area would be able to recognize who these two men were. And, it's their calling card of don't cross us. We're in charge.
Yeah. Well, barbarians are barbarians no matter what country they're in. It's just sad they're south of us. We're getting ready for a break. Thank you for calling. I assume this is El Doctor, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, good to hear from you again. Thank
Love
you for sharing
that.
Thank you. We appreciate you listening, El Doctor. Tell Minuteman,
bye-bye.
We'll talk to him again later. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll come back on Liberty Tree Radio, and we're going to have with us Andrew James from Christian Guardians. We'll do another hour. We're going to ask him a bunch of questions and put your questions through the chat room. So we'll be back. I can't believe we're ending the show with that just disgusting us, but it's true. It's reality. We're reality-based radio. We'll be back after the break.
17 little children, all so helpless and so small, died a senseless death of gas and flames. How many names can you recall? 17 little children, don't it make you wonder why 17, little children, finally open up your mind. How did you sleep last night, Bill Clinton? Tell me, did you feel their pain? At 17, little children cried out and perished in the flames. Attorney General Janet Reno, I accept your offer to resign. How can you stand for law and order now when you won't answer to your crimes? 17 little children, all so helpless and so small. 17 little children.
Crash does come when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest. The last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
Government.
There is rebellion in the wind.
New world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is the problem.
This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency. emergency!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody!
Heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap! It's time for...
Jones!
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome. Welcome to the Dutch Jones Radio Experience. Coming to you live from Camp Kauia, somewhere nestled in the belly button region of California, the People's Republic thereof. This is Christian Militant Worldview Radio, coming to you from Stronghold Radio right here on the grounds of the church at Kauia. And by the grace of the Lord over other networks and downloads, but most specifically, Liberty Tree Radio, and we are on Channel 2 on the CB, I heard. Scotty's in there in upstate New York. All the other people that are carrying us, we thank you, and a special thank you to our pod people. Keep it coming. Olima sent me the numbers, and we still have hundreds of people downloading shows, and we greatly appreciate that. Well, this is normally Code 20 Tuesday. For those of you listening and you were expecting to hear Steve Klein, I apologize, but he is very, very busy right now. He's doing some live interview on some foreign TV, so he had to do that today. But instead, he set us up with a great interview. And I'm going to turn this up while I introduce him. We have on the phone right now Andrew James from Christian Guardians. And I told you in the build-up in the last hour that we have worked with Christian Guardians, but I haven't given a good explanation of it. So, Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great, great, good. You can hear me. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Christian Guardians are all about, where they're out of, what countries they're in, and as always, this is a campfire-type radio show. The forum is yours, brother.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Dutch. Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew James, and I am the founder of Christian Guardians. So I will begin by introducing our organization. Christian Guardians is an organization of Christian warriors who serve the Lord in a unique way, and that is through protecting the faith, the Christian faith, and also by training for war so that we may have peace. Our slogan is, if you want peace, then you have to prepare for war. And which is basically taken from the early Crusaders. Right. And if any of you recall the history of the Crusades, it was started because of just outright oppression caused by Muslim militants and jihadists. And that's what Christian Guardians is all about. You know, we are taking a very, very firm stance against the Islamic Jihad that's going on around globally. And we are preparing to defend our faith, our lives, our land, and our freedom. And we are growing and by numbers. And this organization primarily is based out of the United States, out here in California. But we do have patrons now, in Christian patrons in Pakistan, as well as some in Bosnia as well.
Wow.
So our numbers are growing, yes, and hopefully we can get the message out to people around the world that they need to rise up and stand together with us so we can fight this Muslim problem that we're having worldwide.
Great, and that's how you got associated with Code 20 and Steve
Klein,
because that's the common thread there. Now, why don't you tell us what your background is, because I think it's important that people know your heritage, if you're okay with that, because you've seen things firsthand, and I think people need to know that it's not just Steve and I being a couple of angry redneck white guys. So if you don't mind, it would be cool if you would share that.
Well, I'm a Pakistani-American. My parents, they were from Pakistan, and they escaped the Islamic tyranny back in early 70s when the country was evolving from being a democratic country, and it turned into the Islamic Republic of Pakistan in 1973. So my dad, he identified the trouble in the late 60s, and he started planning that, okay, we need to do something, we need to get out of here. So in 71, he came here to the States, and then, you know, we all, just basically my mom, my sister followed. And, I've been here since then. And, you know, I actually went back and I lived in Pakistan, basically as a missionary in, you know, 5 years.
Wow.
And I have seen the firsthand, you know, events, the terrorist events that take place, against Christians, where they are not just oppressed, you know, as a minority, but just downright, you know, violent attacks against Christians that go on, and the government fails to do anything about it. And you know, the people out there, you know, they're strong. They have, you know, good morals, and they want to stand up against the tyranny. But unfortunately, they are oppressed by not just by the government, but the local. I would say the terror organization. You know, they just downright just come and burn their villages and kill them and beat them. And most of them are just false accusations that they have offended Muhammad or burnt the Quran or something like that. You know, and nobody does that over there. You know, I've lived over there for 5 years, and I did not see any Christian desecrating the Quran or saying anything about the Muhammad.
It's too risky. It would be yeah. Suicide. So you'd have to be ignorant or not caring about your own life to do such a thing.
Exactly. And nobody wants to do that, you know, jeopardize their own safety and safety of others as well. But, you know, anytime some imam, you know, gets the bug to go and kill someone or beat someone, all they do is rally up the troops and say, hey, you know, so-and-so in so-and-so village or area has burnt the Quran or ripped it up, and let's go kill them. And there you go. You know, and then you have a couple thousand crazy, just completely paranoid individuals who just march into the streets and start killing people and burning down their houses.
Now, what is the future for Christians in specifically Pakistan or any other? I mean, you say minority, but they are truly a minority, isn't it? Less than just a few percentage points?
Actually, since the time my family escaped, you know, we were about 3% Christians in Pakistan. However, the numbers have grown since then to about 17%. So that is, I mean, they're the largest minority in Pakistan. And, you know, you have a few, I would say, a mixture of about 3% of Hindus, Sikhs, and Buddhists. But the largest minority in Pakistan is are Christians.
Oh, great. Now, are they growing in numbers through just birth rate, or are they converting Muslims? I mean, it seems like a very, very hard thing to do.
Yeah, that's a very, very hard thing to do, because as you, I'm sure most of you have read in the Quran that to leave Islam, you know, you are basically sanctioned death. And so that's a very difficult thing to do, and the missionaries have failed to do that. So the numbers have grown because of birth rate. They have grown because of birth rate. Okay. And at the moment, 17% it's a significant number.
It is. It's much greater than I thought it would be.
Yeah. However, the threat from the Muslims is there, and even 17%. Of the population of Christians that live in fear, constant fear that, you know, I don't know who's going to knock on my door and said, oh, this guy, he said bad things about Muhammad, and I saw him tearing up the Quran and dancing on it. And so there you go. You know, next thing you know, and Pakistan has this law. It's called the Islamic Blasphemy Law. And anybody who is found guilty of desecrating the Quran or saying anything about Muhammad, not Allah, keep that in mind, is basically sentenced to death.
Yeah.
And which is very, very difficult to abrogate, and the Christian leaders over there have attempted their best to, you know, have the government repeal the law. But so far it has failed. You know, they have failed to do so. And anybody, unfortunately, who tries to raise a voice against, you know, such tyranny is silenced, you know, just outright killed.
What's the daily life of a Christian in these Muslim nations like? I mean, do they have to live in hiding? Do they worship in the open? Are there home churches? I mean, how do they function?
Well, As far as worship, Dutch, worship is open. The government has no restriction on worshiping. There are many churches in Pakistan, and you are free to worship, you know, as many times as you want during the week, whether it's Sunday, Friday, you know, you can have Bible studies. So there is no restriction as far as worship is concerned. As far as the day-to-day life, you sort of live in fear because you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, there is division between the Christians over there. Christians who are, I would say, well-to-do, you know, they hang around in the circle of the elite Muslims, and where, you know, they're kind of looked upon as secular Christians. Oh, yeah, this guy's Christian, but, you know, he's not really a Christian. So they separate themselves from, I would say, the Christians who are not so well-to-do, and the poor Christians who live in the ghettos over there. And I actually, when I was living in Pakistan, I actually, you know, rented a place and I stayed in the ghettos just to help the people out. So, you know, it's a different lifestyle for the poor people over there. And so, you know, they constantly live in fear because nobody knows who's going to get accused of blaspheming Muhammad or desecrating the Quran. So I would say it's quite challenging. And what they do is, I mean, they basically pray for safety.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know, hope I don't get accused of some wrongdoing where I can be apprehended and, you know,
lose everything. Yeah. Do they? What about property and things like that? Are Christians' property protected, or is it easily seized after these accusations are made? Things like that.
From the government standpoint, it's you have equal rights as a Muslim. However, what happens is if a Muslim person wants to seize your property, what they do is they just come and take your property, and they threaten you that okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the cops, you go to the courts, then we're going to say, hey, you blasphemed Muhammad. So it's more of a gangster tactic that they use.
Yeah,
to
it's not really a religion. It's a criminal syndicate, you know.
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I oftentimes when I speak to people, I use the analogy of Islam or the whole religion being as a big gang. It's like Al Capone, you know. Muhammad was basically like Al Capone, who spread fear in hearts of people. He did not go out as like the apostles did or like Jesus Christ and spread the message of hope and love and forgiveness. I mean, for him it was all about, you know, either you believe in this or you get killed.
Right.
So I often use the analogy and tell people that it's nothing but a crime syndicate and a big gang. And yes, you know, I always get slammed with the question, well, not everybody does that. And I'm like, okay, well, not everybody is a Muslim then. You know, if you truly follow the teachings of the Quran and Muhammad, then you know, you would actually end up doing that.
Right, right. So as a person who is of Pakistani descent, when you went there as a Christian missionary, were you allowed to proselytize in the streets? Were there restrictions on when and where you could share the gospel? Because, like, when we send, it's actually, we had a missionary go to Israel, and the Jews wouldn't let our people proselytize in the street. They had to go to the Palestinians to do it. They wouldn't let them proselytize to other Jews. But
In Pakistan, there is some restriction where you cannot just openly proselytize, and you know, but you can openly go into churches, and if you want to preach to the Muslims, you share the word of God with Muslims, you have to be invited. And there are some Muslim scholars who do invite, and they, you know, they like to hear the word of God and listen, and you know, sometimes debate or sometimes share, and that's absolutely okay as long as you are invited. You know, it's by invitation, then that's fine. But you cannot openly go out in the street and, you know, start preaching, and you know, that can get you into trouble.
So what made you form Christian Guardians? You know, you guys obviously are right on board with us here as far as a militant Christian worldview. What was it that triggered it for you? Was it an event? Was it an attitude?
Well, basically, Brother Dutch, it was the growing global terrorism and just outright, you know, murder and just persecution of Christians. And, you know, we live by the codes of the Templar, the Knights Templar. Mm-hmm. And if you study the history, you know, the Knights Templar was started by 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they got so fed up after seeing what was happening to Christians in Jerusalem that they decided, okay, we need to step up and do something about it. Okay? And even till today, you know, the Knights Templar is the most feared militia in the world. It was back in that time. And that's what we're trying to revive.
To clarify, you have nothing to do with Masonic teachings, right? It's just the Knights Templar.
No, absolutely not.
I know some of my listeners just cringed when you said Knights Templar because they associate that with the Masons. And in fact, you don't allow Masons to be part of your program, do you?
Absolutely not. Because, you know, the Masons kind of take credit because a lot of the Masons wanted to do something that the Knights Templar did, and it was basically controlling money, and we had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't allow Masons in our group, and we don't have any Masons. Most of our brothers and sisters are born again Christians.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are open to Catholics as well, and you know, we are selective. We just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page, and you know. So we do not have any Masons in our organization.
What is the goal of Christian Guardians? What do you hope to do? I mean, it sounds like you got an uphill battle. I've been hearing about the Coptic Christians that are very passive and not very militant. I mean, do you wish to teach them the truth of the gospel, or what is your goal?
Absolutely. My goal is to empower passive Christians and teach them that it's your God-given right on this earth to stand up and defend your lives, you know, your faith, your freedom. And that is the goal of Christian Guardians, is to build, you know, a force to fight off oppression and fight off tyranny and fight off downright murder that is going on around the world. So that is our goal.
So,
and as far as the cops are concerned, you know, they are welcome to reach out to us, so we can talk to them and tell them that, hey, you know what, how long are you going to sit around and be killed?
Yeah, the Coptic Christians are a very interesting group. I've tried to reach out to them even when I was in the militia movement in the 90s, and they just didn't want anything to do with it, unlike the Armenian Christians, who are very militant. Now, you had mentioned that you were in, did you say Bosnia, Herzegovina, in that area there?
Yes, I have interestingly met a group in Bosnia, and they are on board with us, and I would love to actually travel down there and you know, meet with them and train with them as well. And these brothers are about 300.
Wow.
And they're fully armed, they train all the time, and you know, they're God-loving Christians. But, you know, they're in fear of their own freedom, their own lives, because, as you know, back in the 90s when the war was going on, and with their growing movement and this Muslim threat, you know, they're fearful. Yes, but they are also very, very brave, and they're ready to fight any time.
Yeah, they've already been in the sights of the UN and that twisted war where they were killing Christians and were on the wrong side.
Exactly.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I heard a dropout. That's okay, it's probably just the phone. Now, as far as training, I mean, why don't you tell us what kind of training you're doing? Are you teaching people just to minister to people, or are you teaching them, you know, the Peter Hammond model, you know, an AK in one hand and a Bible in the other?
Basically, we are teaching something different. It's not the Peter Hammond model. It's not straight up witnessing to people. We're teaching them straight military tactics. Okay. As far as ministering, you know, that's up to the member, you know, to the brother or sister. If they want to, you know, witness to anybody, you know, they're free to do so. And what we teach is just straight up military tactics as far as warfare, you know, how to fight, you know, how to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the tactics that we are focusing on at the moment.
How is it being received in the Christian community in America? Are you finding it hard to get recruits, or are people eager to pick up what you're putting down?
No, it's difficult here. It's quite challenging because Christianity has been dumbed down over here in America. And over the years, you know, it's turned the other cheek, and Jesus is love, and, you know, love your enemies. I mean, that's all good. But a lot of the people don't understand that, you know, there's evil out there, and you know, in the Bible, it's, you know, Apostle Paul says it's okay to hate evil. You should hate evil.
Yeah, the righteous.
You should stand up to evil, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, we're not out, you know, just saying, hey, we're Christians and we're the chosen ones, and you know, you know, we're saying, hey, we don't bother you. You don't bother us, but if you want to fight, you know, we'll bring it to your front door. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, a defensive stance. Now, you said you're finding it hard to, you know, get some Christians on board, but those that do come on board, what kind of person are you looking for? What kind of person shows up at your meetings?
Well, we have a lot of, we have a different blend of people showing up, and, you know, we're very selective about whom we take into our organization as a sworn in member. We're not really looking for people who are hot-headed and have 20 guns strapped onto them and just ready to, you know, got an itchy trigger finger. And we're not really looking for passive people who just want to talk their way out of everything either. You know, we're looking for people who are basically can control their emotions, you know, are open to sharing ideas and also receiving criticism for their ideas. And, you know, we're looking for just level-headed people. But the main thing what we're looking for is people who are brave, who love the Lord, and who are not afraid to stand up and, you know, defend their faith and their lives and their freedom. And if it comes to pulling the trigger, then, you know, that's what it takes, and that's what we have to do.
Now, as far as physical abilities, I mean, obviously it would be great if you were just getting all these Iraqi vets and Afghan vets coming back that are Christians and, you know, and guys that are involved with the, you know, Oath Keepers. But what are you seeing? Is it middle-aged folks? Is it parents? Is it school teachers? Is there a place for everybody depending on their ability, or are you just looking for frontline soldiers?
No, we're looking for people of all ages, all different types of abilities. And, you know, there's always some use of someone. You know, everybody has, in my opinion, everybody has this unique talent that can be used. And not, you know, not everybody can be a commander or a Navy SEAL, you know, because that's mostly physical ability and, you know, also mental ability as well. So there's always going to be a select group. But in our organization, we welcome people who basically have the right attitude. You know, that's the main thing. Because you can create someone. You know, you can discover that person's talent. But what you cannot do is change a person's attitude, you know, once it's set. So, you know, we had this one individual who showed up and is a big talker, this and that, and, you know, when it comes time to actually do something, he was shaking in his boots, you know, to even train, and so we had to get rid of him.
Wow.
And, you know, so to us, it's like, if you're going to come, you know, you have to, first of all, submit yourself to the Lord, okay? You have to believe that through Christ, you know, you are redeemed, and, you know, that's the main thing, and then your attitude has to be very, very humble.
Right.
Okay, and then we can teach you, we can give you the training, the tactics, and but the main thing is the attitude. It's very, very important.
Now, I don't want you to give out numbers or anything like that. I wouldn't even ask you that question. But are you looking for, like the Code 20 reference, you know, 3 to 5 families? Are you shying away from the word militia? Are you looking to put together an army of thousands? Or are you just working on the family level? What's your paradigm there?
The paradigm is we want to be the most feared militia in the world.
You know,
we are not afraid to be labeled as a militia or called as a militia, identified as a militia. That's, you know, that's okay. Because what we're trying to do is we're not doing anything as far as terror-related. We're not going out and just outright killing people because we want to prove a point or saying our God is better than yours.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is we're trying to stand up to tyranny, to murder, to oppression. And that's what we're trying to do. And that is our God-given right on this earth. You know, no government can ever take that away from us.
That's great. I love that attitude. Now, within the restrictions that we deal with here in America and the other countries that you're working in,
mm-hmm.
are you what are some of the limitations? I mean, you can't just go buy a bunch of World War II surplus Lee Enfields and ship them overseas. Are you finding that to be a pitfall? Are a lot of your Christians in these countries not allowed to arm themselves?
Well, the good thing in so far I've been working with Pakistani Christians, and the good thing the government is they're open. They said, hey, you want to buy arms and arm yourselves, go for it. In fact, last year, we worked toward getting special permits for any pastor who has a congregation, I believe, of more than 10 people, can get a permit for an AK-47, which is banned in Pakistan.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that. You see them everywhere in the video, but they're banned there, too.
Right. I mean, well, most of the terrorists, they have them illegally, but
if
you want to go buy it from the store, you can't do that. But now, the pastors can actually go and legally purchase one if they want to. So, as far as arming, the government is okay right now. The Pakistan government is okay. They are allowing it because they know the matter is getting out of hand.
Mm.
And so they're allowing people to defend themselves. So slowly, we're working with the people over there. And people are beginning to arm themselves in their neighborhoods and just kind of create their own security force because they know the cops are not going to show up.
Yeah, yeah.
half of them are with the terrorists.
So it's really not that different than California when you think about it. Pakistan, California, we can't have
exactly.
AK-47s either. We can't depend on the cops. It's not that different.
No, you can't. Yeah. No, you cannot depend on the cops because, a few years ago, back in 2009, early August morning, in Pakistan, there's a district. It's a city. It's called Faisalabad, and then there's a district right next to it, a village. It's called Godra. A mob of Muslims just walk in and just accuse people of desecrating the Quran. And the cops were called. And as soon as they started firing guns and burning down the houses, the cops took off.
Uh-huh.
They're like, we're out of here. We're not going to die over here.
Yeah.
And so the people were left to just fend for themselves, and they stood up and whatever the weapons they had, they just fought back.
Yeah. Seems to be a story throughout history, they always disarm the people who need it the most, and the bad guys can get whatever guns they want, so. Now, as someone who's seen the spread of Islam, and I'm going to shift gears on you here, and if you don't want to go here, that's fine. Is there a risk of these Muslims radicalizing Mexico? I mean, just before the break, we were talking about people being skinned alive down there. It's like their culture's changing and something's doing it.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm not really sure if they're going to be able to radicalize Mexico. I mean, I have some doubts about that because I think the alliance that they're actually forming with the Mexican cartels is they're supplying poppy seed, black tar from Afghanistan and from Pakistan.
Hmm.
And I think that's the alliance that they're forming. And, as you mentioned earlier, that Islam is nothing but a giant crime syndicate. And that's what it is. It's basically these guys will do whatever it takes, And there's something called taqiyya in Islam. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do whatever it takes to advance their agenda. And, for them, they want money, to push their agenda, to push their terrorist act. So obviously they're going to form alliances with the drug cartels. Drug cartels, as far as having any religious, well-grounded beliefs, I'm not really sure if they're going to do it or not. But the threat here is they can say that, in Islam, it's okay to sell drugs to the infidels.
Yeah.
Allah permits that. Allah allows that, because that's a good thing, because you kill the infidels with drugs. So, why don't you turn to Islam, and the drug cartels would like to say, shoot, why not,
Yeah. Yeah, their moral standing is pretty flaky anyway. They're just in it for the money, so they're going to go
right
with the biggest guy on the block.
Yeah. But as far as them converting them to the point where they're praying five times a day to Allah, I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, good point.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I like your input on that. I just wanted to ask that since that seems to be a key thing on our show lately about camps down there and the influence. I have another question for you here. Let's see how I can couch this without it sounding stupid. What are the folks that are doing what you're doing?
How are their families taking this? We have a big problem up here with the men are 100% in and the wives are against it. Are you getting good Christian women involved too?
Yes, we are. We are. And the thing is, you know, you have to talk to the women, and especially if you have children. You know, this should be discussed. This issue should be discussed as a family issue. Because think about it, you know, if there's a rise of fascist Islamic government, then they're not going to spare anybody. You know, they will come and they'll pull the children out of your houses and, you know, take them to the madrasas or use the children for their agenda. So women may be a little bit passive, you know, as far as in the beginning, but if the moment you involve children, you know, the women will listen. So my advice to the men is, you know, make it a family issue. You know, discuss it as a family issue. Do you want any form of government, especially Islamic, to harm our kids? And I bet you their reaction will change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different thing here in America because Americans have had it cushy for so long. They don't see the reality because it's all filtered through the media. They don't see churches being burned and women being dragged in the street for wearing the wrong kind of clothes and stuff like that all that often. So it's hard to get them on board. So maybe with your perspective, having, you know, a family that has come from that and going back to it, and I think that's awesome that you went back to Pakistan to be a missionary. I went to Venezuela, you know, and I was amazed just in the cultural differences there as a Christian. But are you seeing, I don't know, do you use the word militia when you reach out to people, or do you just keep it as a crusader attitude?
No, I really don't try to reach it unless I know this person is 100% in. When I try to talk to people about the organization, I try to shy away from militia because the thing is people freak out.
Yeah.
Okay, they get scared, they think we're a bunch of kooks, we're trying to blow up people and blow up, you know, go up against the government and this and that. You know, they get all kinds of crazy ideas, okay? Unless you really sit down and you talk to someone and you explain to them that, you know, this is what we're doing, and you explain the history of the Knights Templar, and, you know, then they understand, okay? Because if you follow history, you know, when the Templars took Jerusalem, you know, for 170 years there was peace.
Yeah.
They never terrorized anybody, including Muslims who lived there. Okay.
Yeah.
They were still called, you know, they were still the most feared militia in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the image that we are trying to put out there, you know. And they went into Jerusalem to liberate it, you know, not to burn it down and conquer it.
Sometimes it seems like our biggest enemy is the ignorant sheep, not necessarily the enemy that we're focusing on. But what do you do when somebody comes to you and says, well, Islam is just a tool of the New World Order. It's not really a threat. They didn't really fly into the building. There's no such thing as terrorism. Al-Qaeda's made up. You know, how do you deal with folks who say that? Because I always deal with that on my show. I try to find the balance. Because a lot of the militia guys are, you know, New World Order guys, which is what I am. And they don't want to believe that Islam is even real.
Well, you know what? If you read the Book of Proverbs, it says, you know, the biggest fool is the one who tries to argue with a fool.
Exactly.
What I do is like, thank you, brother. Have a good day. See you later. You know?
Yeah.
And I just walk away from people who are just, you know, unwilling to learn and who are just so bent over into their own beliefs about what's going on, about the problems of the world.
Yeah.
Because you cannot get through to them. You know, you just cannot get through to those people. And so what I try to do is I don't even waste my time with them. You know, if you want to sit, you want to learn, you know, I can prove to you, I can present the facts. But if you're just unwilling to listen and learn, then, you know, what's the point? What's the point of even having a discussion?
Yeah, with the ongoing threat throughout history that Islam has posed, even before the New World Order was around, you know, Islam was threatening Europe. Islam was threatening, you know, Africa. And so that's always been the selling point for me. It's just like, look, they're an evil tool of Satan. So is the New World Order. So are white supremacists. So are Zionist, supremacists. Satan's going to use whoever he wants to at that time and space to destroy, know, everything that is good. But right now, it's funny because when I started bringing up the Muslim thing and Islam specifically being a threat to the U.S., oh, it's not really a threat. There hasn't been an attack since 9/11. There hasn't been that. And I'm like, you know, you've got to see what's going on in the world, too. It's not just what happens in suburbia here in America. You know, in North Africa, they're burning hundreds of people in Christian churches, and it doesn't get here. It, you know, it happens in Kenya, it doesn't get here.
Exactly. I mean, just last year in Nigeria, 500 people were just outright slaughtered.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And if people say, well, Islam is really not a threat, I mean, like, come on now. You know, when will you people wake up?
Tell that to the southern Sudanese who had to fight, you know, for what, 15 years to get their country back?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a tough deal. And people people don't want to hear it. Where do you think we're going to be in 10 years in America if we don't wake up? What's your nightmare? Not your dream, your nightmare for America.
My nightmare is you know, United States of America becoming the United States of Islam. I mean, that is my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
So go figure, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to take over a government, a democracy, because basically, you know, the United States is like a sleepy hollow. You know, everybody just, nobody cares. Oh, yeah, you know, we're all having a good life because we've had it for the past 50 years, you know. And people are so just complacent and just so passive. Anything goes wrong, yeah, let me call 911 here. You know, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
They have no idea. And that's what the Muslims are, you know, using to their advantage, you know. And they found this weakness. They found this weakness, and that's why they're using it to their advantage.
Well, I got a question for you, and this is one we always get. And if you don't know, I understand. I'm just, like, I'm ambushing you with some of these questions. I apologize. But is Obama a Muslim? Was he part of the plan? Was he sent here to soften our former republic up so that it would be easier to take over?
I believe so. I believe so. And, you know, I have my doubts about him. And, you know, my father-in-law, he's a minister. And, you know, most of his buddies are ministers. And, you know, we always have these discussions. And, you know, he firmly believes that he's a sleeper.
Yeah.
And initially I thought he was just a socialist, you know, just a
bad
regular
guy.
Joe Democrat.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a super progressive liberal individual. And but then, you know, I have strong doubts that he, you know, I don't believe that he's a Christian, you know.
No,
absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I do strongly believe that he has you know, some agenda to push through the Islamic hold in America. And the funny thing is, I you know, if you notice, we still got about a couple years left till the next election. And these 2 years are critical, and we need to watch him and see, you know, watch every move that he makes. And just most recently, he helped just break down the government of Egypt, and he told Mubarak to, hey, get out, you know, because they're trying to create the caliphate. And also he told Gaddafi to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not, but... So yeah, I have strong doubts that he is one of their sleepers.
Now, what do you think about how we're dealing with all these uprisings in these Arab nations and African nations? Are we seeing a second phase of what Clinton did in Bosnia now, that we're siding with the wrong people again?
Absolutely, absolutely. There is no doubt in my mind that we are siding with the wrong people. You know, as bad as Gaddafi and Mubarak have been labeled, and you know, I think they were good. They were good for those countries because they kept these people under control.
Yeah.
You know, they are labeled as dictators and this and that. And yes, there's no doubt about it. You know, including I have no respect or regard for Gaddafi. I believe that he should be killed. But
yeah,
the thing is, he kept the country under control.
He kept Al Qaeda out. He did.
Exactly. He kept Al-Qaeda out because he knew Al-Qaeda was competition.
That was what he said about a month before the overthrow took, you know, started. He said, I need to step down. I'm old. My sons are retarded. I don't think they're going to be able to run the nation. Somebody help me. He even contacted the monarchy that he overthrew and said, I'll give the country back. I don't want my legacy to be that I turned it over to the Muslim Brotherhood or Al-Qaeda.
Right.
And what did we do? Hitler stabbed him in the back and attacked him.
Yeah. But, you know...
I don't know what they're doing as far as the UN,
NATO,
the current administration. They are absolutely siding with the wrong people. They are helping to they're helping establish the caliphate.
Yeah. And we're arming them, definitely. They say they're not, but I know we're arming them. We probably have troops on the ground training them because they've gotten more organized.
Right now they have the CIA and Special Forces training the rebels. Can you believe that? I mean, these rebels, if you see on TV, they have anti-aircraft guns, okay, artillery. You tell me, where did they get those from?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, can we get those here in America and California? No. I don't think so.
Even in the deepest, darkest ghetto of L.A., I can't buy a Stinger.
I can't. And in Libya, where guns are banned, you can't just go to the store and buy them. These people have anti-aircraft artillery installed in the back of their pickup trucks.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
U.S. taxpayer paid for and provided, probably.
Yep.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, they're doing exactly what Carter and Reagan did in Afghanistan. They are training and arming our future enemy. The book Blowback was fantastic. We trained and equipped, you know, Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, and he flat out said, "When I'm done with the Russians, I'm going after the great Satan next."
Exactly. And my worst nightmare is, you know, as you asked me before, is once these people whom the United States and the UN are helping, you know, once these people create the caliphate in the Middle East, they are going to unite and they are going to launch an attack on the United States of America.
Yeah.
And if you study the history of the Crusades, that's precisely what they did back then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've always said that they wanted to draw our troops in. That's why they're, you know, they irritate the world with their suicide bombings, Russia included, and Europe and America, you know, and like the shooting down in Texas. So we'll continue to send troops to their backyard so they can practice on them and to see what our tactics are and to gain control of the battlefield when they come here because they've got the experience now.
Exactly. And at the same time, you know, they're weakening our troops. You know, if we send 30,000 and, you know, let's say about 20% get killed, you know, that's less people for them to fight.
Well, and they're also destroying the resolve of the American people. They're winning a huge psychological battle because everybody's growing tired of this war. So they're like, leave them alone, just leave them alone, just leave them alone. And that's exactly what they want. So they don't have to operate in the dark anymore. They can just be left alone and operate like they want. They're gaining control in Europe. They've lost a little bit of control in Africa because of the Sudan, but that is just a pinpoint victory. But they're going to take over Africa, they're going to take over Europe, and it's just the third great jihad.
Absolutely, yes. Although I must commend the English Defense League for standing up to these guys. When just today I was listening to the news, how you know, the radical factions in England are threatening the royal couple who is about to get married, but the English Defense League is out there threatening them.
Good, yeah. Stacey just told me about that. She said the Muslims are threatening to disrupt the royal wedding.
Yeah.
And so now the English Defense League is going to counter that. They're going to be like impromptu security.
Well, pretty much. I mean, they're like, okay, you threatened the royals? Guess what? We're coming after you guys. So... And the good thing is, the law enforcement, they are tightening up the noose on the radical Muslims, but the EDL, you know, they're giving them permission to come down and do a counter-protest if you want to.
Right.
So
now,
that was
so we've got to be watching what's going on in Europe because we're not far off here in America from this. Now, you guys are involved, I know, with Steve Klein and stuff, doing protests and showing up to places and things like that here in America, but... We're just seeing the beginning of it. These are just peeking through the veil, no pun intended. Whatever's happening in Europe will happen here. Train bombings, fires, riots, Australia. What's happening there over the veil? Protests, things like that. Do you see that coming here? Do you have a time frame in mind, or is it hard to gauge something like that?
No, it's not really hard to gauge. I mean, I can see that happening in the next 5 years.
Wow.
I think. Things are going to get really worse, and that's why, you know, we're encouraging everybody to basically rise up and, you know, be prepared to defend themselves.
Right. Because we, from what we've studied, that once you stand up to them, they usually run with their tail between their legs, like most thugs and bullies.
I mean, that's the history of Muslims. You know, they're basically they work like a gang. You know, if you go up against a bunch of gangbangers, you fight them off, they'll run. You know, they're only strong until somebody steps up. You know, that's the way they are.
Sure. Now I have a question for you. Getting back to what earlier you were saying, that there's 17% of Christians in Pakistan. Now, it's tough because Pakistan's their home. That's where they were born and raised. It's part of their culture, non-Muslim Pakistani culture. Why don't these folks just come to America? Why don't these folks go to places where Christians have, not that we've won a big stronghold here, of course, but I think you get my, for sake of argument, let's say that this is still a Christian nation. Why aren't they flocking to southern Sudan? Why aren't they flocking to European nations? Or are they going to stand and fight there for their nation in Pakistan?
Well, Brother Dutch, a lot of these people in Pakistan, I mean, they're poor. You know, they're Christians. Out of the 17%, I would say 50%. Of the Christians live well under below the line of poverty.
Mm.
So for them to even dream of going abroad, it's just not possible.
Okay.
And as much as they want to, the nations such as United States of America or European nations, they do not welcome them because they would rather welcome Muslims,
right?
But they do not welcome Christians. And we have tried our best to negotiate some sort of a deal, where Pakistani Christians can escape Pakistan and plead their cases that they're persecuted over there in Pakistan. But the U.S. government turns a blind eye and a deaf ear.
Yeah, see,
because they don't care. And issues related to Christianity or suffering of Christians are considered, I would say, non-critical or not in the interest of the United States government. Let's put it that way.
Well, I would even go farther and say it's part of the conspiracy to have an onslaught against Christians. We have Chinese people that are trying to get citizenship that are kind of seeking asylum here that have been coming to our church because if they go back, they'll be killed for being Christians. And the pastor is working with them, and he says he goes to the hearings, and it's like, Muslims, okay, yeah, welcome, but all the Christians from different nations are like, they keep extending them, they keep asking for more paperwork, more money. It's not just immediate that they, and the Muslims don't even have the excuse of, well, if I go back to Libya, I get killed. They say, no, it's fine, nobody's killing Muslims there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the American government loves Muslims. Loves, everybody else, but as soon as you say I'm a Christian and I was persecuted in Pakistan, sorry, bud.
Well, in your time here, since you've been active and involved, what are you seeing in your community as far as the Muslim encroachment? It's easy to sit here and say, well, in 5 years they're going to take over. Well, where are we seeing the incremental occupation and influence in our nation of Muslims that you've noticed?
What I'm seeing right now is Muslims working within their own community and trying to basically, there are plenty of people who are just labeled as Muslims who never go to the mosque, never read the Quran, but some guy's name is Muhammad or something, So what they're trying to do is actually get a hold of their own community, and put fear in their heart, threaten them, whatever, to control them. It's, going back to the same gang tactics, Control your own people, you can control everybody else. So that's where I'm seeing a lot of their work. And I have first-hand experience of seeing someone going from being a total secular California kind of a girl to now wearing one of those garbs, the Muslim garbs, and walking around saying Allah all day.
Right.
Like, whoa, where did this come from? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she started, I know her at a personal level, and she started telling me that I need to come to Allah and all that, otherwise bad things will happen to me. And I was like, okay, well, why don't you let me deal with Allah? I'll deal with him myself.
So they are actively converting, like, the neutrally minded folks here.
They are actively converting the neutrally minded people, beginning with their own people who are so-called secular Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going after people who have no faith foundation. A lot of the people who were born here in America, whether they're Caucasian or black or Hispanic, but never really had any religious foundation. They're going after those people. And just making them believe that they can do whatever they want because Allah's on their side. You know, it's basically giving them something that they never had before.
So are they actively training in a militant stance like we are? I mean, some people say, well, they have to because you are, but, you know, this sounds like a little kid, but they started it. They're coming here with a militant attitude.
Absolutely.
Is it your opinion there are training camps here in America already?
Absolutely, there are training camps. I mean, even the feds know that.
Yeah.
Even the feds know that. There are, I think the FBI has identified about 18 training camps, and 3 right here in California.
Wow.
And, you know, they are actively training, and, you know, an FBI report was issued last year where they have identified about 18,000 Muslims who are training in the camps and, you know, who present a threat. So they are training. They are actively training to terrorize people, and that's why we need to actively train to defend ourselves.
Yes, exactly. So when we see groups like the Muslim Student Association, the MSA, should we be alarmed when they're in our children's colleges?
Absolutely, we should be alarmed. You know, don't take them with a grain of salt. Oh, yeah, these guys are just a bunch of Muslims. No, these guys are terrorists. Yeah. You know, you need to watch their activities. You know, you have if you engage with them, if you have any type of discourse with them, you have to be very careful. Because these guys, you know, they're the ones who will come after you, you know. Hmm. So we have to be absolutely cognizant of MSA if you see them in your college campus. I mean, they're not just your average Joe standing there handing out brochures. No, these guys are terrorists.
They're everywhere. They're even in our little, we have a town of about 90,000 called Visalia next to us. There's they call them junior colleges here, community colleges. There's an MSA there. They had a meeting, and about 12 of us went to the meeting, spread out, and completely ambushed them with questions, and they didn't know what to do. So it's important that we counter these things when we find them, because they are arms of the terrorist organizations.
They are. And, you know, they're in every college, every university, and now they're even going down to the high school level.
Oh, that's insane. High school level. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I can't understand what the allure would be, especially for like a young woman to, you know, subject herself to that kind of slavery and organized crime. I don't know what the appeal is. I can't imagine why anybody would want to be a Muslim and give up their lives for such a hate-oriented, violent machine, but I guess America is a fertile breeding ground for them.
It is, because a lot of the people over here, they do not have any strong religious background or foundation. You know, from homes, they've been raised in secular environments, and now all of a sudden, you know, they go and they find this something like a magic potion where Allah is going to give you this power.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like and everybody, I mean, secularism has done a fine job of destroying the pillars of Christianity. So when you go to a university, Christianity is looked down upon. Now, you know, they're this and that. But now they have this something new, a new religion, you know, where they feel, wow, okay, you know, I'm going to get this power once I become one with Allah and Muhammad. So I believe that's what's attracting them. And as far as women, they truly don't know what Islam is.
No idea.
You know, they never read the Quran. They just join because, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to be powerful, this and that. And for guys, it's all about power.
Sure
it's about
is.
Money. You know, these people are, you know, they have a lot of money. And if you offer somebody, some student who goes in who's broke, you know, you offer them something, they'll be attracted.
Well, Andrew, that's it. We just flew through an hour. I didn't take a break because the stuff you were talking about was so good. Can you give us a website or a contact info if you want, or do you just want them to email me and I'll forward them to you, whatever you like?
Well, people are welcome to go to our website. It's called www.christianguardians.com. That's guardians with an S. And you can email us with questions at info@christianguardians.com, and, you know, we'd be glad to answer any questions, or, you know, we'd be glad to share more information with you regarding our work.
And, of course, if you missed any of that, you can just send me an email, and I'll make sure that you get the information. I want to thank Andrew James for filling in for Steve Klein today. I hope to have you on in the future. And this has been Dutch Jones filling in for Code 20 on Tuesday, coming to you live over Liberty Tree Radio, Stronghold Radio, and all other points that carry this. Special thanks to Scotty, to Ed, and to Olima out there for rebroadcasting and archiving our shows. Don't forget to check out the show if you missed any of it. This has been an awesome hour. I am Dutch Jones, and remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, the victory belongs to the Lord, but he's asking you to stand in the gap because he loves you, he cares for you, and he's given you not just the right, but the duty to stand up against all enemies of God, wherever they come from. I'm Dutch Jones. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be back. Thank you for listening. God bless you all.
Thank you.